So I hope that you are all here for this session. If not, it's time to leave. I know it's a bit early. We really appreciate you coming to a session Monday morning. It is Monday, correct? How many of you have been here for a couple of days thus far? Do you sort of lose track of which day it is? That's why I woke up this morning. I thought it was Tuesday. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, I missed my Monday sessions. And I said, Jack, you did a great job. So I'm Ron Bialik with the Public Health Foundation, and I've been at PHF now for 15 years, and Jack Moran, partner in crime here, is our senior quality advisor at the Public Health Foundation. Real briefly, we have no relationships that we need to disclose regarding this presentation. We are not getting any money on the side for doing this from any pharmaceutical company. A quick word from my sponsor, our sponsor, the Public Health Foundation, what we're all about, and our mission is we improve the public's health by strengthening the quality and performance of public health practice. That's what we're all about. We focus on quality improvement, workforce development, and that's what this session is about, is how can we use a quality improvement tool to help us with our workforce development activities and prioritizing the type of training, the competencies that we may wish to focus on for our organization. Our learning objectives, before you leave the room, we're going to give you all a test to see how we did, by the time we're done, you should be able to describe the core competencies for public health professionals if you cannot already do that. Describe the strengths and weaknesses within your organization, as well as explore how to use a quality improvement tool. And we'll have about a half an hour exercise, Jack, to explore using a quality improvement tool for this purpose. So what are we going to focus on? What we want to focus on is something that you could go back home and hopefully use. So what we're thinking here is that given the current state of affairs, given the economy, your organization's structure, the political realities that we're in, are there particular competencies where it makes sense for you to focus your organization's limited professional development time and funds? So what we're thinking about is, 10 years ago, there may have been certain things that were important for you to focus on. And you may have had a workforce plan, and you may have articulated the competencies and the priorities for those competencies. The world has changed. And we always need to be looking at the world that has changed, where it is today, where we think it is going, and prepare for that. So what we will be going through in our exercise is looking at as how do we consider those in terms of prioritizing our training needs. And we'll be using the core competencies for that purpose. So where did the core competencies for public health professionals come from? How many of you are familiar with the Council on Linkages? Wow. Well, that's pretty good. We can just go on. Real briefly, though, the Council has been, actually we'll be celebrating, Kathleen, you told me we'll be celebrating our 20th year. You haven't been there for 20 years. But the Council on Linkages is coming on 20 years at this point and was established to help build relationships, strengthen relationships between the academic world and the practice world. And if you think about it, if academia and practice are working more closely together and more effectively together, we end up with better education, better training, better research, and better practice. All of that working together. There are currently 19 council member organizations. We actually have a member in the room, Amy Lee. Any other? I don't think there are other council members. No, in the room. Any individuals in here on any of the Council on Linkages work groups? I think there are a couple of folks. There's the Core Competencies work group. There's our Pipeline work group. There's our Academic Health Department Learning Community work group. So, yes, thank you all for your willingness to volunteer in these various groups. I should also point out that we have with us Kathleen Amos. Kathleen, will you just say hello? And Alita Hong, who are both wonderful staff for the Council on Linkages. Alita just started now
beginning of the month.
Right, as I say, 2-3 weeks ago. And we're delighted to have Alita with us to work with us on the Council. So what are the core competencies? How many of you before you came here were familiar with the core competencies for public health professionals? Again, wow, this is great. We don't need to have the session. So why did we come up with the core competencies? The core competencies were meant to help us in our field better understand the skills that are desirable for the practice of public health. For the practice of public health. I'll keep on stressing that, the practice. And they're not meant just for practitioners. They're also meant for faculty in schools of public health. They're meant for people who are working in private sector. It's not just for governmental public health. They're really meant to apply to people who are practicing public health in a variety of settings. A faculty member in an academic institution is practicing public health. They may not be practicing it like we practice in an agency, but it's practicing public health. So it's meant to be desirable skills for the broad practice of public health, reflecting the characteristics of the organizations. And what's real important is they're a starting point. They're not a mandated standard. No one is saying that you have to follow every single one of these and do every single one. So in your organization, if rewriting a couple of these makes sense because they'll speak better to individuals in your organization, or saying, you know, these 20 are a little less important to us, or adding to it, that's okay. This is a consensus document. It's not meant to be a standard that everybody is mandated to use. Let's go through a little bit of the history. The original set of core competencies was adopted by the Council on Linkages back in 2001. Were any of you involved in that process? No. We had a very extensive public comment process with that. Actually, I have to stop and tell a real quick story with the core competencies. We like to say that the original set was 2001. There was a document that we published back in about 1990 called the Public Health Faculty Agency Forum Report, which led to the creation of the Council on Linkages. We had an icebreaker when we convened this forum. This forum was meant to look at what is it that we can do in academia and practice to work together. Again, it led to the creation of the Council on Linkages. So we had five different groups. We had biostatistics, epidemiology, health administration, etc. These groups all met separately, equal numbers of academics, equal numbers of practitioners. And as an icebreaker, we said, well, if the practice and academic community is going to work together to improve practice and improve education and improve research, what is it that we think we'd like public health practitioners, public health professionals, excuse me, to look like? And so the groups working in their separate disciplinary areas worked on coming up with what they thought they would like to see people look like at the end of the day. Well, it turned out that these five groups meeting separately, it's actually four groups, we merged epidemiology and biostatistics, these four groups meeting separately ended up coming up with a variety of competencies that cut across the disciplines, behavioral science, health education, etc. So we took that and we ultimately said, well, gee, maybe this constitutes a core set of competencies for public health practice. And at that point in time, Hugh Tilson, who was on the council, who's still on the council, he said, well, we can't call it a core because core is the part of the apple that we throw away. So the very first set of competencies were called universal competencies, and they were published back in around 1990 through the Faculty Agency Forum. Then when 2000 came around and the council revisited those universal competencies and did a complete rewrite, we realized, you know, it's okay to come up with core because there are these things called the core public health functions, and core is not a bad word, so let's use it. So anyway, that's a little bit more of the history of the core competencies. And they are meant to be a set of skills, knowledges, and attitudes for helping us practice. We intentionally, back in 2001, made them not particularly measurable. Anybody have an idea why we intentionally would come up with a set of competencies that were not easily made measurable? Any thoughts?
Skill levels
vary from state to state. Well, that's a good one. Hadn't thought about that. Skill levels vary. Any other reasons why we might have come up with a set of competencies that were not particularly measurable?
It could be applied differently.
That's another good. What had happened was we had a fear. We had a fear that if we had very measurable competencies back in 2000, that they could very easily be taken and put into standards. And we weren't ready for that, quite frankly. It was the first time we did this. It was a consensus process. There hadn't been a lot of demonstration of use. And we didn't want people to just take a set of competencies and put them into a standard, whether it's certification or an agency saying this is the standard for practice. So we wanted to have time, really, for the community to use these and for the competencies to grow and for people to become comfortable with them. So we purposely made them not measurable. Now, was that a good decision or not? We actually, when we went through the revision process, which we'll talk about in a moment, were asked, can we make them more measurable, please? But at that point, they weren't. The Council on Linkage is committed to revisiting the competencies every 3 years. So we revisited them in 2004, and the Council chose not to make revisions. They chose not to make revisions because we, at that point, had not had enough data on the use of the competencies. And we didn't feel we should go ahead and revise them at that point in time. Then 2008 comes along, 2007, 2008 comes along, and the council asks the same question. It's time to revisit. Do we know more? Well, now we have data that there's fairly widespread use. And we'll talk about that in a moment. And we also have seen demonstrated validity. There's actually one study that was done at that point out of St. Louis University School of Public Health that noted the validity of the competencies, that individuals who are more competent within the agency using these competencies tended to perform better. So what about use? We see that state health departments, over half health departments are using the competencies from an ASTO survey. Local health departments, where about 30% of the local health departments report actively using the competencies. Academia, 90% of the academic institutions use them at some point in time. It may not be for their whole curricula. It may be with their public health training centers or some of their CE types of activities. Federal agencies are using them as well. We know that the Health Resources and Services Administration, for instance, requires the use of the core competencies by the public health training centers. Federal agencies also like CDC are using them for developing other sets of competencies. Anybody involved in developing the epidemiology competencies? Denise Koo will tell us that, who's also a member of the council, that the core competencies were a place that the epi competencies started, just like the community nursing competencies and other sets of competencies. So they're meant to be a starting point for other disciplines as well. And then we also see learning management systems, such as the one we have at the Public Health Foundation, train, but others also using the core competencies for noting what competencies courses relate to. When we went through the revision process, we received over 1,000 sets of comments from all over the field. We had comments on our website. We had town hall meetings at a variety of locations. APHA, we had a real nice one, a big one. And then we even had email communications. People would say, well, would you consider this? Would you consider that, et cetera? And paper letters. Really? Well, they were sort of on these tablets, and they were carved in. So we went through this process, and what did we come up with? You'll notice we said we maintained the original 8-domain framework. One of the comments that we heard from many of the practitioners who were using the core competencies and many of the academics who were using the core competencies was, you know, maybe there's a reason to have a 9th or a 10th domain. Maybe there's a reason to change the domains around. But this is what we're using. This is a framework that works for us. So please don't change it. See what you can do to fit the competencies into the existing set of domains. And so we made a decision, the council made a decision that we don't want the perfect to be the enemy of the good. And if we're hearing from the community, please leave it in that framework, we should do that. And that's what we chose to do. We also heard that it's a little bit difficult to understand the competencies because we would say, well, for this competency, if you're at a particular level, maybe you should only have basic knowledge, and this one, proficient knowledge, etc. And they said, can you break it up a little bit better? Can you come up with competencies that are more specific for entry level, for mid level, and more senior level? And so we came up with these three tiers. They work together, clearly. They build on one another, but it's a little bit easier for people to see the application using these tiers. And then we also decided to hire a competency cop, Kathy Miner, from Emory. Kathy is wonderful, and Kathy helped us get it right. So she would say things like, only one verb statement in a competency. And boy, her and I went back and forth lots because I like to put as many things in as I can. And then also no internal modifiers. So you don't want to say that you want to do things that are pretty good. And each competency statement is placed in one domain. So even though clearly competencies fit across domains, so it's a competency in a domain that deals with financial management might also deal with leadership, but it only belongs in one place. And that's what we did as well. We also made the competencies by this process of tiers and by making them clearer, they're more manageable, and they're now more measurable. Because what we heard loud and clear from, really it was mainly from health departments, is we want to be able to measure. We want to be able to know a competency when we see it, so please help us by making them a little bit more measurable. How are the competencies being used? We're seeing them being integrated into job descriptions in health departments, workforce competency assessments. If we go down to workforce development plans, those of you in the room who may be working on accreditation, health department accreditation, workforce development plans are key, and potential use of the core competencies are key for those plans as well. Performance objectives, continuing education, et cetera. And we're also seeing that academic institutions, many of them will take their courses and will try to crosswalk them with the core competencies to see how they're addressing the practice types of competencies. And also we're seeing them used for performance reviews and evaluations of individuals. Future, I guess it's really not future any longer now that accreditation has been launched. But the core competencies are incorporated into Domain 8 of the Public Health Accreditation Board standards. It doesn't say you have to use the core competencies for public health professionals. It says you have to use a nationally accepted set of core competencies such as the core competencies for public health professionals. Healthy People 2020, there are three healthy people objectives that incorporate the core competencies. Everything from encouraging health departments to integrate the core competencies into job descriptions and performance evaluations, to health departments delivering continuing education that uses the core competencies. So it's not just education, it's not just training, it's training and education for a purpose related to building skills and competencies. And thirdly, with regard to accreditation standards for schools of public health, graduate programs, community nursing programs, is that these core competencies should be integrated into the curriculum. So there is wide use of the competencies and potentially growing use given the Healthy People 2020 standards and public health accreditation. So let's talk briefly about the eight domains for the competencies. What are they? Does everybody have the core competencies document at this point? Okay, good. The document is online as well. Feel free to download it. We have a variety of crosswalks. We have a crosswalk with the Essential Public Health Services. Because one of the questions that the council asked is, if these are meant to be competencies to help us practice public health in a variety of settings, they should help us deliver the 10 essential public health services. So we crosswalked to make sure that was the case. And we also have a crosswalk with the former set of competencies, so you could see which new competencies fit with the ones that existed before. So what do we mean by analytic skills? There are a whole variety of competencies under that, but it's basically finding the data, turning the data into information, and using the data for your community's health, for improving community health. Policy development and program planning skills, the second domain. What are the policy needs in our community? And you notice it doesn't just say public policy. There's a variety of policy. There's private policy, there's school policy, et cetera. And then effectively advocate for policy, and then plan and implement, evaluate, and improve the programs and the policies. So it's not just having the policy, but continuous improvement with them as well. Communication, first and foremost, listen. It's the one I have the most difficulty with. Right, Jack? Yeah, okay. Actively listen, key. interpret, think, analyze, and communicate effectively. Cultural competency. This is really where you want to understand the diverse needs of your community, and also to understand the diversity of your own organization and the diversity needs of your own organization and the competence in terms of cultural understanding of your organization, and ensure that your organization has cultural competence to be able to effectively serve the community where it is. Community dimensions of practice. You want to be able to develop partnerships within a community, but it's not the way that some people develop partnerships, which is, okay, we have an issue, let's bring everybody we can think of to the table. It's really thinking about who are the right people at the right time for the right issues to contribute to solving a problem, continuing to improve a program, etc., because everybody can't help with everything. And sometimes if you bring all the partners together for everything, partners wonder why they're there, and then they won't show up when you really need them to show up. So it's having the relationships, it's having the partnerships, it's being critical about them, analyzing them, and then having programs and policies that not only your health department or your organization advocates for, but also for the community. So if we think about tobacco tax today, anybody from New Hampshire in the room? I mean, New Hampshire has rolled back their tobacco tax. And this is where, again, the partnerships with the other players in the community become so, so key. And then evaluate the effectiveness of your community engagement activities. Basic science skills, probably the clearest set of competencies within the whole set, which is, you know, incorporate the basic sciences of public health into what it is you do within your organization. Don't just accept the data. Don't just accept the research. Think critically about it. And last but not least is have academic partnerships. So if you are a practice organization, it's important to have academic partnerships. What we didn't do in here, and I would love to add to it, which is have practice partnerships. So the academic institution, likewise, would have that if you really want to have a competent set of individuals and organization. Financial planning and management skills, leveraging resources. Boy, is that a big one today, right? Leveraging resources, managing them well, evaluating the programs and their performance. So you don't just throw money at an issue. More money does not always result in a better program. The better use of money may, and more money may result in a better program. Motivate is part of this particular area, and establish performance management systems within your organization. So if you don't keep track of what you're doing, you don't measure what you're doing, it's hard to improve what it is that you're doing. Leadership and skills thinking, leadership and systems thinking skills, ethics. Incorporate ethical standards and ethical practice into your organization. Mentoring is part of this. And ensuring quality, continuous quality improvement in the organization. And really, if you think about that very last one here, managing organizational change, again, that is something in today's environment that is quite key for all of us. So I'm going to turn it over to Jack. That was just a quick overview. I just tried to highlight a few parts of each of the domains. You have the domains, the full set of competencies with you. You can look through those more. But I'm going to turn it over to Jack for the second part of the presentation and discussion. What we're going to do is we have the framework for the competencies that we established, and Jack will talk more about the quality improvement processes in the prioritization matrix so that we can get on with our exercise.
Welcome, Mike. Everybody survived the snowstorm okay? That's good. Well, anyway, we want to talk a little bit about is how to use the advanced tools of quality. There's the basic tools you probably know, which are, you know, flow charting, run charts, Pareto, histograms, things like that. But actually, what we want to do is start with a very large cross-functional issue, something like core competencies, and explore them. Now, fortunately, Ron's group has done the exploring. They've gone through with council leaderships and put them into broad categories. So what we want to do today is sort of sort and prioritize them. There's two methods you can use. One is the interrelationship digraph. The other one is a prioritization matrix. We're going to use the prioritization matrix today. And then once you have those, you sort of tell you the key ones you want to focus on with your limited resources, You can then go in and understand where you are as an organization on those key ones using a radar chart or a SWOT analysis. Then you can break them down into actions and tasks to make sure you achieve those skills and competencies that you want. And then you can develop the project plans and then some problem prevention. So one of the things you find is with the prioritization matrix and all of the advanced tools of quality is that they go sort of through this funneling process. Every time you use one of the tools, it further refines it, further focuses you, and brings this very large issue. It keeps bringing it down to narrower and narrower things to focus on. And it's really this constant process of refinement and insight. Because every time I've done this with groups and we've gone through all of the tools, one of the things people always say is, I never would have thought of that at this point. So it's a key thing that just constantly gives you some new insights. So our idea in this case is to come up with a clear action plan that we can move forward with on a problem or an issue statement. And prioritization matrices really talk about making decisions. Now, one thing I always make sure I tell people is I show a two-way arrow here. We're only going to do a one-way. You know, we're going to make a decision. Kind of say, well, you know, pretty good. We're going to make a decision. And it is a rigorous decision-making tool for a couple of reasons. One, it has criteria that we have to look at, and then we're going to use those criteria to make decisions. And what it is an L-shaped matrix. And what an L-shaped matrix is simply like this, a square. The nice thing I found about these sheets, they always stick when you don't want them to. When I stick it up in the wall, it'll fall down, but when I want to move it quickly, it won't. And really, when you go through this process, one of the things I just like to bring people up to speed on is that it is a matrix. And if you remember back to algebra, everybody remember algebra? 8th grade? 7th grade? 6th grade, if you were advanced? Okay. A matrix has two things. It has rows and it has columns. Now, don't ever ask me why. They said I is the row and J is the column. If I had been there, then I would have made it an R and a C, making more sense. But what you find with mathematics is they always try to make it more complicated than it has to be. So one thing to think about as we go through this today is every one of these rows and columns has an identification. So this one is row 1, column 1. This is row 1, column 2. Row 1, column 3. Row 1, you don't have any columns, 4 over there. So here you go, this is row 2, column 1, and so forth. Because this is important as we go through it today, because we make pairwise comparisons, we make a comparison between 1 and 2, we're going to want to make sure that we record the scores in these two places. Okay, this is column row 1, column 2, row 2, column 1. That's where we're making a pairwise comparison. So as I talk about it today, we'll put in those numbers because it makes it easy for you to find them when you're doing the comparison. So again, we're going to utilize the decision criteria, and we'll show you one of those as we go along. Why do we do it this way? Well, for a couple of reasons. Consistency. You know, when you're making decisions in a group, if you don't have a criteria up here, you'll change it in every one of the comparisons, so there's no consistency. So, you know, one time we might be using cost, the next time we'll use quality, the time after that we might use convenience. So we finish it, there's really no consistency in the process, and that's really what we're trying to do in this case. So we pick the decision criteria before we start the process. Then we develop a numerical scale to really represent each of our judgments as we go through the process. And then we do this pairwise comparison. So what happens is, you'll find is the bigger the matrix, the more the comparison. So if you get one that's 10 by 10, you've got 100 comparisons you've got to do. It goes pretty quick once you start doing it. And then what we will do is develop the weighting, and then we'll have a consensus on what we come up with. Now, best to do it quickly. And what you find is when you do this in a group, you have various people who have various expertise. So you let the people who have the expertise on that particular comparison make the judgment. And it's rather interesting when you get a group of about 10 or 12 people, is it switches around when you're making the judgments. You know, first you've got a couple of people over here who'll get the scores and a couple of people over there. So you let the experts make the judgments in this case.
And it will rotate through the group as you do it, you know, and can defer to those who understand it. You can question them, but most of the time it goes back to those experts. So we develop the standards we're going to use. We stick to them, and you constantly make sure you reference that criteria as you're doing the process. And you can't switch standards partway through, because if we do, we get inconsistency. Again, it's easy to skip this step and just, by hunch, or by convenience, make a decision. But this gives you some judgments that you want to look at. Some criteria you could use. You know, quality, cost, delivery, better human resource allocations, improved financial results, use of latest technology, better outcomes, better service, flexibility, easily used. Any one of these could be a decision criteria or something else that fits your problem. Each problem is unique, so you need to develop them. I've just given you a list of things we've used over the years, and it keeps on growing every time we do a different one. So really our question is, as we do this, is does having, in this case, our first comparison, in this case, number one, as it says here, contribute more and usually we just leave this blank when compared to number two in achieving our goal. So we constantly keep asking this statement. We want to keep going back to what is our goal? So we start this on the criteria in this case. So whatever we have as criteria or goal, does it contribute more, less, are they equal? So we'll develop a scale, and what we want to be able to say, does having number one contribute more, less, are they equal when compared to number two in achieving our goal, or does it contribute less in achieving the goal when compared to number two? So those are our comparisons. I found your first inclination is usually right because you have the experts in the room. This is what the matrix looks like. The line through the middle is you can't compare number one to number one, can't compare number two to number two, and so forth as you go through it. We've blanked them in. Some people thought it was a trend line at one point. If it is, everything's negatively correlated, so go down. Okay. Oh, we got some statisticians in the group. Statistical joke. I have a degree in mathematical statistics, so I've dealt with people. One of the jokes I remember from a long time ago is, you know what the statistician said to the parrot? Polynomial. This is a weird group, Ron. They got it. Now, Ron wouldn't think that was funny at all. It's good to be among friends here today. Never get much laughter in that joke. The only time I ever got a really good guffaw out of that was with the American Statistical Association. I think they're still laughing. So anyway.
I had your number.
Where did this come from? Well, it was based on the works of Thomas Sowdy. And if you like that joke, you'll love his book. It's about this thick, and there's no pictures in it. So if you ever have insomnia, it's a wonderful book. I've read it like four or five times on planes, and I've never gotten out to the taxiway awake. Put you to sleep. But he's gone through and it's really proved this. It's called Decision Making, the Analytical Hierarchy Process. And he wrote another one, Decision Making for Leaders. And it's really all about how to prioritize and how to make sure you come up with weighted criteria based on a decision, goal that you want to do, and stick to it consistently. So our scale. As we do this today, keep the scale up. Scales 1, 5, and 10. Okay. 1 is equally important. So we could say when we compare number 1 to number 2, they're equally important in achieving our goal. We could say that when we compare 1 to 2, 1 is significantly more important, and we'd give it a 5. When we give that a 5, what it would tell us is that number 2 in this case is significantly less important, and that would get 1/5. So as you go through this goal, whatever score you give it, the other one gets the reciprocal. So if they're equally important, each would get a 1. If number 1 was significantly more important in this case, when we compare it to 2, when we compare 1 to 2, if this is a 5, this would get a 1/5. Or it could be exceedingly more important. You get a 10, the other one is exceedingly less important. Now, we just use these numbers. Every time I do this with Ron, he says, I want to give it a 7.5. Can't do that. 1/5 of 10, 1/5, 1/10. The reason the spread is there is to give you consistency in judgment process, but also to find a really important item. So when you give a 10, it's got to be really important. When you give a 5, it's got to be significantly more important. Now, one thing I also put in here is when you have, you know, 0.2 and 0.1, when you have this filled up, if you have 1/5 and 1/10, the higher the level of the audience, degree-wise, the more scores you will get that are all different. People can't add 1/5 and 1/10 together. And so I always get enjoyment out of doing it, you know, and you say, let's add this up, and the group adds it up, and you get different scores from everybody. So if you put 0.2 and 0.1, it simplifies the process. I found most people can add those together pretty easily. So again, simply make the addition. You can spend more time in adding up the matrix than you can in doing the matrix sometimes. So what are the benefits? We have rules. It's quantitative. It's objective because we keep the thing in process. There's a discipline to it. And we have a focus. Now, I want to try one with you. I'm going to make some popcorn. How many people in here are experts on popcorn? Well, that's good. You'll claim it. Okay. There is our expert. Now, what we're going to do in this case is look at how four ways to make popcorn. We can microwave it, we can air pop it, you can pop it in oil, or we can prepackage it. And the first criteria we're going to have, our first goal is, the popcorn has to taste good. That's what we want, all the way through. So what we want to do is compare each one of these. So if we compare microwave to air popped, using our rule here, is having microwave popcorn contribute more to making tasty popcorn when compared to air popped in achieving our goal? So you said yes. So there is a relationship between the two. Is microwave better, equal air popped? Is it better? You give it a 5. So you're saying microwave is significantly more important than air popped. So this would now get a 1/5. I would say air popped is now significantly less important. So if we did microwave now to popped in oil, our goal is to get tasty popcorn. Are they equal? I mean, it's got to taste good. Or is microwave more important, significantly more important exceedingly, or is popped in oil significantly more important or exceedingly?
I think popped in oil is more important.
Okay, how much? This is tasty. It's going to really taste good. It did say popped in oil would get a 10.
But I had lots of butter in my popped
in oil. So popped in oil plus butter. And salt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and salt. Right?
Sometimes a little sugar.
Okay. Sugar.
Really good. Okay. So now if we said microwave to prepackaged, are they equal? Is one better than the other? Microwave better than prepackaged?
Yeah.
How much?
Oh,
10. Okay. Yeah. If this is 10, yeah. This is 1/10. Now, since none of the other of you has ever expressed any expertise in popcorn making, just the two of us are doing this. Okay. Now, if anybody else has a different score, jump in. So now if we look, so now we've made that comparison. So now we looked at air popped to popped in oil. Are they equal? Is one better than the other? Okay, which one is better than the other?
Popped in oil.
How much? Now, sometimes you get some disagreements in this, and you have to really, as a group, discuss it, because really what you want to come up with as part of this process and the discussion is why. You know, why do we make those decisions? They're very nice. Two of us have agreed totally here on this course, but we get some other people coming in, which you really want to discuss why. And sometimes you might have to write a post-it note and stick it on there and say the reason we came up with why, you might get scores 1, 5, and 10 in the group. So everybody agrees. One says it's equal, one says it's significantly more important, one says it's exceedingly more important. You might even have to postpone that box and that comparison until you can capture some data. You might have to go out and prove the point to somebody. You know, let's go out and get some data on that. We'll come back another session and do it. That's not unusual. So if we say now if positive prepackaged, are they equal? No. One better than the other?
They're equally bad.
Equally bad, okay. As a group, can we agree to that? They're equally bad? So this would get a one. This would get a one. They're equal. Now we look at popped in oil to prepackaged. Are they equal?
No.
One better than the other?
Yes.
Which one? Popped in oil, salt, butter, all that stuff? Yes. How much better?
A lot of experts.
So now we finish our comparison. So if we add this, remember this is 0.1, so this would be 15.1. This is 0.2, 0.3, 1.3. This is 30. And this is 1.2. Now, our goal in this case is, and usually what happens is, one of these pops out really big. Get that pops out really big? Okay.
That's pretty cool.
Okay. You are awake for a Monday morning. It's good to see you. Yeah. You got the power one. I think you should get that one. So we see this one comes out really large, 30. Yeah. And it's telling us in this case, and it's not unusual, you get a 10 by 10 or 12 by 12. One or two will pop out really big. They're the ones that are really key in the case. The other ones you can see scored very low. This one, down here in this case, 15.1, that would be the next best method of doing this in this case. But we stuck to our criteria all through it. The other thing that comes up sometimes is you might have a tie. Both have the same final score. And you figure when you do a large matrix like this, it's very hard for anybody that has a hidden agenda that's going to drive it through. You lose it after the second comparison because if this was your hidden agenda, we made the comparison, it disappears off the graph, and then we do the rest of them down. So after a while, it's very hard to hold on to anything that's a hidden agenda. But if you had a tie, let's say AirPods and prepackaged came out as the top two. The thing to always do is go back and look for the score. And I find 90% of the time, we score them as equal. And it comes up time and time again, we get a tie, this score is equal. And that's the time for the group to say, are they really equal? And let's go back and look at those in more detail. So let's try one more.
Styrofoam.
My wife always does that, and then she puts butter on it. What's
wrong with the butter?
But it's healthy. The microwave is popped in oil. Eagle. Everybody agree to that?
No. I think microwave is...
I hear a 5 for microwave and a 1/5. How about microwave to prepackage? Are they equal? Yes? Microwave better? This is healthy one. Than prepackaged?
Prepackaged has preservatives.
Microwave.
How much? 5, 10?
1.
Say they're equal.
1.
Say they're equal. Okay, how about air pot to pot and oil, the healthy pot bun? Is air pot better than microwave? Much better than pot and oil? Are they equal? One better than the other?
Air pot is healthier.
10. I heard. 10. How about air pot to prepackage?
Air
pot.
How about you?
10.
How about pot and oil to prepackage? Pop and oil. Prepackaged against 5. So we come up here with 6.1, 30, 22, 23, 25, 24. Yeah. So you can see in this case it switches. Air popped is now the better one. Now, in this case, here's 6.1 and 6.1 are tied. And if you notice, they have the same score. So it's not unusual when you're doing this to come up with a tie. And if you really want to break that tie at the second level, you can now look at, is microwaved and prepackaged really equal to each other, or is one really better than the other?
Wouldn't you have to also set the criteria of what elevation is so that, you know, are you looking at the fat content, or are you looking at the chemicals, or are you looking at...
You can bring it down. Yep.
So that you're comparing apples to apples.
I just thought a public health group would know what healthy was. Nice. Yeah, I'm just kidding. You're right. You can. You can define the criteria. You know, you can put this, it could be a lot of, you know, percent fat, all of that stuff, ingredients. And this would be where the data comes in for the process, because you may say, you know, I don't have enough data. I want to see what that package of microwave popcorn you're putting in. And I want to see the prepackaged one that we're comparing it to. And let's look at them as a group. Let's look at the package labels on the back and compare them in this case. Great. That's exactly what you can do. So you can make this as detailed as you want, but make sure you have the criteria. So you have to have one to do this. And what the other thing you want to do is when you're going through this is constantly make the comparison back to the fact that this is what we're doing as a goal. I'm always amazed how groups lose it as you go through this, you know. What are we comparing this to? Healthy popcorn, not tasty popcorn. So this way you could look at the scores as we were talking about earlier. And you could look at these two. And then you could do this to another criteria. Then you'd have 3 of them that you could start to look at. Make comparisons. So you could also look at the cost. Which one is more cost effective? And go through each one of these and look at them.
So,
Mr. Bialik, we have the exercise.
Oh, good, good. Kathleen and Alita, if you can hand out the paper, that would be great. How many of you in the room are in a state or local health department? Oh, good. You will constitute one group, all right? How about you guys could be in the group over here.
This will be state and local.
State and local. Academia? A lot of academia. Okay, what we'll do is, can you keep your hands up again? Okay. Put down now, and other. And other, is it not-for-profit? I know federal.
Not-for-profit.
Okay. You're aware? I'm sorry?
Nonprofit.
Okay. All right. What we're going to do is We have state and local folks here, and, you know, Irene, since you're government, also, how about you could be with the state and local folks? So we'll have governmental public health over here. We'll have the folks who are in academia on this side of the room over there. Since there's a lot of academic folks, we'll have the other set of academic folks who are on this side of the room go into that corner. And then the group of the other not-for-profit types, this group over here, okay? All right. Now, what are you going to do? Jackie, you can tell people what they're going to do?
I don't have a clue.
You don't have a clue.
What we want you to do is take the 8 criteria and rate them using this prioritization matrix. And the goal in this case is you have limited professional development funds for the year. So how would we spend our limited professional development funds this year? What would be the best areas to focus out of these 8 criteria? So as you go through these, what you want to look at is, if I look at this group over here, is the other group?
The other group, mm-hmm.
The reason we're doing this, we want to collect these when we're finished, because we're going to put a white paper together that everybody can reference later. And just see if there's any difference between state, local, academic, and other. And really what you want to look at is you've got limited development funds for the year. And where would be the best place, given those limited development funds, for you to focus your organization? So you'd look at analytical and assessment skills with policy development. Which one would be the ones, how would you rate them? I've got limited development funds in this case. Is analytical and assessment and policy and development equal, that I want to spend my funds on? Is one more important than the other? Is it significantly more important or exceedingly more important? I remember what Ron said today was, the world is changing, okay, so it's today. So also you might want to look a little bit into the future and say, you know, if I'm going to put my money that I've got a limited pot of money, where is the best place to put it? Between these two. Then look at analytical to communication, that political to cultural competency, and begin to rate these and fill in the matrix and look them up with the score. Yeah.
Is the organization a public health department?
No, the organization for this group is not-for-profit. For that group, academia, and think about it in the context of your organization, which is why we also wanted the more homogeneous groups, thinking that the health departments may have a different set of pressure, set of issues in the academic institutions.
Yes. Is the tier issue, how does that play into this?
Right now, think about it in the context of just those 8 domains, okay, of the content within those 8 domains. So that's a level of detail that after one went through the prioritization and determined that this particular domain may be really important. Now let's dig deeper and figure out within the tiers what might be most important, and then within the tiers, the specific competencies. That's a really good question. Amy?
Is the criteria that we're using limited time and funds, or do we put our own criteria based on?
We'd like everybody to use the same one.
Right.
Okay, in this case, be limited. Yeah. Limited from
It's given today's reality. And what you think tomorrow's reality will be, where do you put your money and your time?
So, Ron, for academia, you know, I could go either way, but
right,
with academia, you're saying that within an academic organization, mm-hmm, which could be faculty, your group could be faculty in the School of Public Health, or
right,
the other professional employees, mm-hmm,
I would think about, my preference actually for this exercise would be for, in the academic environment, thinking about it in the context of your faculty and administration. So what is it that the skills and competence of the people who are working within your institution may benefit from?
One other question, Ron, on the one for the local and state, they should focus it on the organization skills.
Correct, not on the community, but on the organization, the people who work within the health department. Alan?
What about folks who live in both worlds?
You can just decide which group you go in. Okay. But that's another really good question because, as Jack had mentioned, criteria, it's really, really, really important. So here we're saying that it's the time and money, right, and the realities of today for your organization. So the criteria, if you're in this group, your organization is the health department. If you're in that group, your organization is the academic institution. And so you have to be thinking about the criteria specific to who you are, where you are, which hat you are. Many of us in public health wear multiple hats. You have to think about that. There was another question? No. I know we say on the slide 30 minutes, we're going to keep it to 20 minutes. Is that fair? Right. And I think the groups can do it. And for folks who want the matrix, you can use the one you have, the paper one, to write things down on if you'd like. I think we have extra. Yeah, so if folks want a clean copy on their way out, they can get that too. Okay? Well, since you're first to this group, you can help with the numbers.
Hi, how are you? Good morning. Hi, how are you? Okay, so it's the health, we're going for health departments, and we're looking at time and funds as our criteria. So what do you think? So we compare the first two? So analytic assessment and policy development. What do you think is more important?
This is more important, right?
So what did we get, 10 or 5?
Over analytics, probably 5.
Five.
Oh,
you say
analytics
more important
than health.
No.
Oh, you said
the other. I'm sorry. 5? Right. Yeah. One fit. 1.2. Yeah, there you go.
And we move down to the next one? Okay, so communications versus policy development. Oh, analytics.
Well, I think communications
is
really
important.
That
word. Yeah.
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 Five.
Five.
One
fit.
You
should. Are
we okay?
Yep. So cultural competence.
No, we do policy development.
Oh, policy development? Okay. So it's policy development?
No.
Equal. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. Right. Yeah. I mean, I think
maybe do the project management of one project. You really need to be able to make the decision. That would have me and that would be doing something.
So this conversation to me.
compared to analytics.
Things like forget the criteria is limited resources right. for professional
development.
Five or ten. Five or ten. In this environment, in the financial, you can't deliver the numbers.
And 10, we're comfortable with 10?
Yeah.
Organization external.
And the other one is 1/10.
1/10.
Okay. Versus analytics.
I think yeah, I really think that's really important.
Right.
I think that's what I suffer from in terms of my organization.
I think communication is more.
Five or ten? Okay, so policy development and cultural competency. Policy and community dimensions. Okay, comfortable?
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that. 1/1. Right.
Okay, policy development and financial.
Equal. Yeah.
We've done it. Let's not be optimal. Okay, communication.
Cultural competency.
Cultural competency.
Yeah, 1/1 is okay with me. Especially in our communities.
It depends on who you are, really, what your
community
is like. Okay, communication versus community dimensions.
You might really switch that.
5. Are you comfortable with that? Communication versus community dimension.
Yeah,
community dimension 5. I think communication is a basic science skill.
Communication is at least 5, yeah. Cause
communications and financial.
Yeah, 1/1 is okay with me. Yeah.
Cultural competency versus three dimensions. Cultural competency, basic science.
I'm going to put cultural competency over. If you're going to do training, what are you going to do training in? And the basic science should have been part of the job hiring thing, you know? So. Yeah, right.
5, 10. Cultural
Well, it really just depends on the job skills, on the job role, but if you're going to, for your whole staff, I would go equal. I would, maybe because we're in budget time, I don't know.
Right.
You can't have one without the other, right?
Yeah, right.
You
know, exactly. They're very intertwined.
Right.
I mean, management has to have that kind of philosophy before.
I'd go one. I'm okay with equal. Right, health disparities thing, you know.
And usually they're the ones that make the decisions.
Right, right.
Go. If they don't have the philosophical bent,
right,
you're going to have that little, you know.
Well, yeah, that's why they said don't do the whole, don't get into the tier thing, you know, I mean.
But it's hard because our mission is the people that we serve. So organizationally, we have to be ready to have that cultural competence, have those communication skills to be able to serve those communities. I don't know, it's a tough one. What does a group think? Equal? Okay, so cultural competence, get the one. And
systems.
Thank you. Okay, community dimensions versus basic science.
Community dimensions is five at least. Five or ten, yeah.
Community dimensions versus finance. Financial. Again, we get into that little.
Right.
You know,
right.
Dollar.
One, I could equal, I could be, yeah, I could be happy with.
Now one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Okay, community dimensions versus leadership and systems.
Yeah, I'd give leadership a five.
Okay, we're good. Down home stretch.
Hey.
Basic science versus finance.
I'd say finance. You should come in with the basic.
Right. Right.
Oh, right. Because we're trained.
Right. Right.
So.
10
basic science?
No, 10.
10 finance.
Yeah. This is a cell. This is a bacillus.
All right. Basic science versus finance.
Oh, leadership is 10.
Leadership
is 10. 10.
They're equal.
One doesn't happen without the other.
Okay, so somebody want to tally whoever did the restroom? I'm trying to hold it.
Yep.
What I like about state and local is very focused. Get the job done. Cool. Amazing.
Doing more with less.
Right, yes.
I can save you some time. Don't bother with the decimal points. They mean nothing.
Okay.
In the long run, they won't add the other thing. Either way. Oh. That's not even going to happen. So if you rank these, these would be your top two.
We have about five more minutes. And just so people don't feel pressured, the practitioners are just about done.
We're number one.
Too bad there isn't a prize. Probably should have had a bag of popcorn.
Right, guys, Blake.
Right.
I love practice.
Yeah. Much better.
More focus.
The name of the person that you said that was based on the... Thomas Saadi, S-A-A-T. It's in the slides.
Oh.
You download them.
The slides will all be up. They're all up on the APHA site eventually. I don't know when.
But they're
up there. Okay, thank you.
So they got a tie. So
good guys are really moving now. Thought the academic groups were having trouble with the the addition. Ah. We did not get an IRB approval before this session. So Jack, you just about... Jack.
Jack will be going around coming over here probably, so he's going to get that. I'm mentioning that to him. Strip him for the trouble.
Okay, let's get back together for a second.
Do you want
to? Now, let's just take a quick look at each of the charts. On this one, which was the state and local, they came up with a tie between financial and leadership and systems. They got a score of 29 each. They're also equal. The other thing you look at this chart, they have a lot of things that are equal. So you might go back and do a little more soul searching and see if you get a little more separation in this case. But, so the state and locals, financial, planning and management, that's?
Yep.
Yeah. Leadership and systems. If we go down here to our first academic group, and I think I told everybody, don't bother to add up the decimals. It's just fun to do that if you really want a frustrated group. It's just fun sometimes to watch them, you know, flounder around getting the wrong total over and over again. They came out with 61 in this case for leadership and systems, and the next best one was communications and financial, the next two big ones. So you do see them pop right out in this case. And if we go over to this one, you came up with communication, community interventions, and leadership and systems. Two different, a little different in this case, not academic to this group. That must be, this must be a West Coast academic group. And then this group, I don't want to call you other, I guess not for profit, okay. You came up with financial and leadership and systems. So,
wow. A lot of similarity across the groups, which surprised me a little bit there. I serve on a commission on health, and we went through a similar exercise, a couple of us with the commission, and we are totally advisory. So we don't make policy, we don't have any authority over the budget, and so as we went through this exercise as a commission, communication came up real high for us because, well, what can we do? Effective advocacy, effective communicating, getting the case made, getting the point across with that. So it's a valuable exercise, I think, regardless of the type of organization. Some resources that could be helpful to you. So once you identify the training needs, then what do you do? So there's a resource, one that we have at the Public Health Foundation called Train, where we have over 21,000 different courses in it. And I'm mentioning that I did a search beforehand on leadership, just thinking that that might emerge as a topic here. And for instance, there's a course, Leadership Strategic Planning and Systems Approach from South Central Center for Public Health Preparedness. Anybody from that center here? Okay, great. All right. So you could go on to Train. You could search for, you know, leadership courses by the competency or by the domain. This comes up. You can then go click on this, and you can go take the course, and it's free. And we actually had somebody who said it was a good course. That's good. Just one example. There's also other resources that we have at the Public Health Foundation, like our Learning Resource Center, our bookstore, where there are a variety of publications, such as our Quality Improvement Handbook for Public Health that we have. There's also performance management and quality improvement resources on our website, a lot of free resources all over the website. There's something called the Public Health Improvement Resource Center that Emily is very involved in, and just a number of tools. We have a tutorial on quality improvement that you can go through. It's a quick tutorial, and some case studies, white papers, etc. Others, there are lots of resources in public health. APHA. They have a variety of resources, in particular around a lot of the subject matter in public health practice is key. National Association of County and City Health Officials, they've put up a variety of new tools and toolkits and model practices, a lot related to accreditation. We have ASTO, the State Health Officer Group, National Network of Public Health Institutes, et cetera, here. Actually, et cetera is not one of the groups, I'm sorry. Public health training centers, a couple of individuals in the room. Actually, if I saw the practitioners here, said, financial, you know, planning and management, leadership system skills. I'm a public health training center. Of course, this is a very representative group. We know, but seriously, you know, there are things we could do with practitioners to learn about the needs and gear the resources for the public health training centers to help the practitioners. CDC has its learning connections. We also have performance improvement managers from CDC, the publichealthpartners.org site, which is National Library of Medicine, and other partners involved with that. A lot of really good resources out there that you can use. One thing I failed to mention at the very beginning of this presentation is that the core competencies in the council itself is sponsored by two federal agencies. Irene, you're one of the sponsors from Health Resources and Services Administration. We also have the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. We are delighted to have them involved. Actually, HRSA started the council way, way, way back, and then CDC came on board, and then HRSA left at one point, and HRSA's back on board, and we're grateful to have the two federal agencies very involved with us. Thank you very much for your attention and your involvement, your participation in the exercise. Jack will be writing this up as a white paper. You notice I said Jack will be writing this up?
With Ron's help.
With what? Right, right. Yes.
Are your slides available?
The slides are available on the APHA site. I'm not quite sure how that's accessed, but yes, they are all there. We also, Emily, you.
There's also an article on the PHF website. If you search for the word popcorn on our website, it will show up.
It'll pop right up.
There's a kernel of truth to
that.
Right, right. Any other questions before? And we'll be around a little bit. We'll come by our booth at PHF also. We have a lot of resources to pick up. Yes?
The LMS system that you mentioned, and I guess that was what you just said.
Right, train.org.
Okay. Can those courses be loaded onto another LMS, or can they?
The Public Health Foundation does not own the courses. So basically, providers of training, 3,100 providers of training have put courses into Train. The courses stay wherever they are. So if they're a university course, they stay at the university. The university provider of training puts the information into Train. Somebody goes click on, you know, register or launch. It either launches it if it's an online course, or it may go right to the university. So we could talk about that, but it's free for anybody to use. So if you can't download it onto.
You have to link to that.
You have the link. You have to get on Train.
Right. Anybody can register. Yes, and anybody can register. If you want the courses, you have to talk to the provider of the course. Again, we serve as more of a clearinghouse in a way of helping people connect to the courses. We don't own them, so we can't give them to folks. There are very few courses themselves on Train. Most of them are housed by other institutions. So. I can give you more information.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep. Anything else? Well, thank you all so much. Appreciate it.